That's for a standing person. All right. Got to take my glasses off so I can see my notes. I'm Wendell. I'm living loved by Jesus. I'm recovering from spiritual and emotional abuse and addiction to food and work and control, which was what we're talking about these days, control freaks. I've had issues with porn and alcohol and panic and rage and depression. Hi. Wasn't that music fun? It's cool. Cool having Retta back. Joe was back last week, got everybody back, and that's fun. Fun. We're talking about being control freaks, and so this week we're going to talk about the first of three sessions that kind of talk about the divine medicine for control, the cure for control, which I don't know that we're ever really cured, but it's a maintenance drug. Keeps us kind of operating and getting better about control. But the main thing, that the opposite of control is trust. And it's not mostly learning to trust other people, but it's learning to trust God. Point of personal testimony, every time that I find myself holding a grudge against somebody, or any time I suddenly realize I'm dealing with panic or chronic worry, or if I'm dealing with just any other emotion that goes rogue. No emotion is bad, but they go rogue. You know, they start screaming out for attention, and they dominate your life. You obsess, and you know, so depression, panic, anger, all that. Every time when I find myself going down that path, I realize you stopped trusting God. That's always it. Every time. Not 99% of the time, but all the time. So that's the issue with me, and I have a hunch that it's the issue with all of us. That the opposite of control, me trying to be a control freak and control every little aspect of my life, the opposite of that is to trust God. So I want to ask the question tonight, and we're going to have some fun with this, hopefully. I hope you find it fun. I had a fun time preparing it. So why don't we trust God? Why do we find it hard to trust God? And the first reason, I think, is just plain as can be, because we can't see Him. We can't see God, you know? So we assume that since we can't see Him, that it may be a little bit hedgy or a little dodgy whether He is there or not, whether He cares, whether He knows we exist. And if He would just show up, if God would just knock on the door and show up and make His presence known, then we would totally be okay. I set you all up. He tried that in the Old Testament. When you're out in the wilderness, every morning, you could roll back the tent flap and look, oh, He's still there. He was there every morning, every night, pillar of smoke and fire. But I'm hungry. Breakfast is on the ground. God's been here. You can see Him. And if that's not enough, God said, well, I'll just become one of them. And I'll live with them as a human. And we saw Him, and we ate with Him, and we walked with Him, and we, you know, lived life with Him, and we still doubted Him. Don't you care that we perish? Remember that one? He's in the boat with them. He's in the boat. He doesn't want to drown. Don't you care that we perish? So we say, I don't trust God because I can't see Him. And He says, excuse me, we've tried that. We've done that. And that didn't seem to cure the doubt problem. That didn't seem to help us with the trust issue anymore. So how'd that feel? Shot that one in the foot. So here's another reason why we don't trust God, I think, is because He doesn't give us what we want when we want it. So He doesn't have to show up. But just give me what I want. And why do you have to take so freaking long? You know? Why does there always have to be a delay? I remember when Carol was sick, especially early on in the diagnosis, where we still thought there might be a chance that she would live. And every day I just lived with God, if you would just give me some sort of guarantee, a visitation, an angel, anything, right on the wall, I don't care. You know, Gideon with his fleece thing, make it wet, make it dry, do something, give me some sort of indication. Either way, I don't care. Well, I did care, I wanted her to live, but either way, I just need to know what my future holds. I've got this little baby girl. You know, I've got this life ahead of me. I don't know what to do. And I never got a memo. That's for the days of email. But no letter ever showed up. No, he never plopped down a contract and said, okay, I'm going to guarantee that you have this long with your wife before she passes. I never got any of that. That sucked. I mean, I was pissed at that. I was mad at God about that. We have a God who, I know, don't you understand, God? We talked about this earlier. We have a God who continually goes off script. Like, seriously? Why does God have to ad-lib all the time? Like, just off the cuff, living off the cuff. It's like, God, come on. We want a predictable God. Even if you're not going to send us guarantees, could there be some form of predictability about the way you operate? Can we form some kind of pattern in our mind that God always does this? And we can't even do that. We can't peg him down to a pattern. Well, God did this, this, and this, but then he didn't show up there, and then he didn't do that. So we can't get a guarantee out of him. We can't get any kind of pattern that we can, you know, really see. I mean, David all the time was like, God, I'm doing what you want me to do. I'm living according to your principles, and my life still sucks, you know? What's the deal? And I look over here, and people who are rank pagans, they sacrifice their own children. They're prospering. They're prospering. What is the deal? So we have this God who goes off script. He ad-libs all the time. So that may be another reason why we don't trust him. He refuses to break laws we think he should at least bend. Come on, it was a little baby. And they fell off the balcony and they died. Couldn't you have suspended the law of gravity? I don't mean to be cruel here, but I'm just giving an example. Couldn't you have suspended your laws there for just a minute? Terrible, vicious man rapes somebody or hurts somebody. He has free will. He can choose to do what he wants. Couldn't you have intervened in that free will just for a second? Just for a nanosecond, you know, to keep him from doing that? These were good people. These were good people, and you didn't intervene, you didn't do anything, you know, to break your laws, the law of free will, the law of gravity, you didn't do anything. So we have nature that roars. I mean, it just roared through Middle Tennessee. We got nature that roars. We got disease that kills, the coronavirus, whatever else you want to say. We got thieves who steal and killers who kill and rapists who rape, and you think, God, if you want us to trust you and you don't step in and stop this stuff, what's the deal? And you have to, well, let's not answer that yet. We want a God who steps in and especially protects the people that we like, people we find to be likable and lovable. He, the innocents, the good ones. You should step in and protect those people. Why don't you do that? And then the fourth thing is he breaks laws that we think he should enforce. You know, we have in our mind that there are certain people who we think, and I'm gonna go way out on a limb and cut it off, so just go ahead and I'm warning you. We have people who we think, well, they probably should go to hell. They probably should. Because we read the document, it says that they're this way, so they should go to hell. So we want God to shun them. We want God to punish them. We want them to burn. Maybe we don't want them to burn, but we think they should. We don't want them to, but we think they should. And God reaches out and embraces these people. I mean, Jesus did it constantly. He did it with prostitutes. He did it with people with leprosy. He did it with tax collectors. Called one of them to be his disciple. And everybody's like, ah. One time there were some people, I think it was in the book of Luke, was it? There were some people doing something up north of where they were. Maybe it was up north. Laura probably knows this story by heart. But the disciples found out about it, and they told Jesus, do you know what they're doing? And in a sense, they said, we want you to nuke those people. They should not be able to carry on. Jesus said, no, they're doing good. Leave them alone. So we have a God who won't break the rules to defend the good people, and we have a God who embraces people we think are bad. So why should we trust him? So now that I've tried to paint God in as bad a light as I could, and I still love him, sorry, but I mean, I've tried to paint him in as bad a light as I could paint him. Let's paint him in the very best light we could paint him. Let's turn this around and say, we've got a blank check. We can create a God however we want him to be. So you don't like that God who doesn't show up when you want him to? You don't like that God who won't break rules to save little innocents? You don't like a God who won't punish the people we don't like so well? You don't like that God? Well, let's create one that we do like, that we could accept, that we could kind of control. Let's create that. So, first of all, I want a God I can see on a regular basis. So, you may disagree with me. I'm just giving you my perfect God. My perfect God would, I don't want him to live in my house. Okay? I don't want him to live in my house. That's a little too close. But what if he just moved in across the street? That way I could see his pickup in the driveway every day. You know, kind of like the pillar of smoke and fire. I could see his lights on. I could hear his radio, and I'd know God was there, and I'd be good with that. I could keep tabs on him. I got him on speed dial. I've got signals with my front porch light. If I need him really bad, he's right there. Boom. You know, we eat burgers together. We take walks together. I've got God right there. He's readily available. So that's the first thing. I'm just going down the 4 points. So the second thing, don't throw things at me. I'm just telling you my perfect God. My perfect God would become a slot machine. And it would be one that every time I put a token in, I'd get, what is it, cherries all the way across. Boom, I won. It's a windfall every time. So I don't have to wait. I put it in, I pull the lever, I get what I want. Boom, I'm on my way. I can go and do what I want when I want. I don't have to sit around. I don't have to think about it. I don't have to put 2 tokens in. I don't have to put 6. I just put 1 in. I pull the lever, cherries, boom. Bring me a wheelbarrow. I'm loading up with my cash and I'm going. I've got what I want. Yeah. That's my God. So here's number 4. And this is my son, Jake's term. God would create a Nerf world. I just love that term. He would create a Nerf world where there are no sharp edges. The floor is super soft, so no matter what height you fall from when you land, nobody gets hurt, you know. People with free will suddenly all want to do the right thing, you know. The rapist suddenly decides, no, I don't want to do what I do. The killer, I don't want to do what I do, you know. All tornadoes and vicious winds would bypass all the households of innocent people, always, 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 you know. And gravity would only work when we needed it to, never at an inconvenient time, or if somebody we liked is going to fall victim to gravity, it would just suddenly be suspended. They could fly, they could float, you know. God always caters to the people I like. I mean, that you know, I like them. Come on, they're good people, and they've not done anything really terrible. They're good people. They really add good things to the world. They deserve to live and to be protected, so God needs to protect them every time. No matter what they do or anybody else wants to do, God needs to protect them. So that's number 3. Number 4 is, we'll use that term I used in the Gospel of Luke, he'd nuke everybody we didn't like. Man, all we got to do is point at them. Poof. I heard what you said about me. Poof. You know, God would, the people we don't like, the people we find inconvenient, the people who push back against us, the people who won't give us a raise, people who won't give us promotion, you know, all of our exes, if we have those, you know, all of them, all the people we find unlikable, boom, what if we just got a basket, we put them all in that basket and shove them out on the front doorstep and we holler at him, he's right across the street, and he comes over and takes that basket and takes it far away and does something appropriate to those people. Appropriate to those people. Huge air quotes, appropriate to those people. Silly, silly, silly. I mean, we're all kind of, What does this do to me? Who do I become? And a spoiled brat God, an entitled God, a childish, juvenile God, a completely self-absorbed God. That's who I become, you know? And a lot of us would say, but my heart's too good. I would never do that. I'm scared to death to even think about what would happen to me placed in that. I mean, we've got one example in Scripture that comes close, one. Maybe some others, but one real clear one where God said to Solomon, here's a blank check. You know, I've already signed it. You sign the amount. You know, your slot machine's always going to be good. I'm going to give you power. I'm going to give you mules and wives and chariots and buildings. And, you know, you're going to have emperors from other countries come in and bow at your feet. And, you know, I'm going to give you all this stuff. Get a blank check. And he gets to the end and he said, that was horrid. That was horrid. There's no meaning to any of it. So for us to create the God that we think we could trust, this is one I could trust, diminishes us to a terrible place. You know, it just take. And what does it do to God? He becomes a joke. And I don't mean to say that in a bad way. He literally becomes a joke. He gives up all his God papers. He surrenders them all. And just says, you know, I guess I'm your genie. I don't know. I'm just your genie who gives you what you want and protects you at every turn. And I don't care about the state of your heart. I don't care about your character. I don't care about your honesty. I don't care about any of that stuff. All I care about is giving you everything you want. That's not a very good God. So, I don't know. It's like when I was working on this week, I thought, how in the heck do you end this? You know, we've said, why don't we trust God? And even through my blurry, non-glassed eyes, I saw you going like this. So you got that. And then when I said all the stuff about, okay, we create one that we think we like, yeah, that's a joke. Everybody's like, yeah, that's a joke. And here's what I did. Doesn't mean this is what you should do, but you've heard me say this several times. When I felt, I was in my early 50s, and I felt really disoriented. I felt kind of lost, and I thought, so who is this God? I know what my radically conservative upbringing taught me he was. I know what my formal education told me he was. I know what 25 years of ministry in a very conservative setting told me he was. And none of that really satisfies me at this point. None of that. In my head, some of it makes sense, but in my heart, I'm having panic attacks. I'm having depression. I'm having rage. I'm battling all these demons. And I have a hunch that God is not able to help me because I'm not even calling out to the real God. I'm calling out to an artificial God of 50 years worth of manufacturing. So who is God? And so I've told you before, what I did is I said, and bless his heart, I like him now, but didn't then. I said, forget Paul. He's not in the Bible anymore. Forget the Old Testament. It's not in the Bible anymore. All I want to do is, because Jesus said in John, if you've seen me, you've seen the Father. So I said, I'm just going to hang out. And I did for about 10 years. I'm just going to hang out in the four Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. When I was done, I go back and start again, over and over and over and over and over. And the more I did that, the more I thought, goodness, God is not who I thought he was. I'm getting a fresh, new picture of who this God is. His conversation with Nicodemus, this religious expert who knew the word back and forward. And Jesus looks at him and he says, you know what you need? You need a new spirit. You need a new heart. And he said, and you all are expecting the Messiah to come and set everything right and to be like a judge and be like a policeman. He said, I didn't come for that. He said, I came to save the world. I remember when that hit me, I thought, I didn't absorb that growing up, but it made sense there. So many, The woman at the well, of course, all these are in John. John is one of my favorites. But the woman at the well, where she tries to get him to argue about where we should worship. Remember that? We Samaritans say it should be over here. You Jews say it should be over here. He said, you know, really, that's pretty obsolete. All that's obsolete, because real worship happens in spirit and truth. I think, I don't have to see my God. I don't have to get my God to jump through hoops. My spirit is born again into his spirit. That's what makes the difference. I realized I was loved. I realized that God was not keeping track of my behavior down to the little, every little jot and tittle of my behavior. I realized that God was just like he started out in the story, saying, dude, can we just take a walk together? Can we just hang out and just spend time together? Well, you want to talk about how bad I am, God? No. I just want to talk about whatever you want to talk about. I just want to hang out and be with you. That's when things started to change. That's when I started to trust him. But I don't trust him like I wish I did. There's no way close. Just throw me a curve. I'm back in panic mode. Don't know how to handle a curve. But I'm better off than I was 10 or 15 years ago in terms of trusting God. And my control issues, they're still raging. But I'm still having aha moments. Had a major one the other night at home. Robbie's looking at me like, what's wrong with you? And after it was over, I said, I just learned something. I threw a fit like a little baby is what I did. But I had an aha moment. And I thought, it's so cool to have a God who says, let's walk together and I'll show you what you need to see one step at a time. And, you know, one little piece at a time, I'll show you what you need to see. And so I'm learning to trust him. Anyway, I don't know. Maybe you have your own reasons why you don't trust God. I don't know. But I think these are pretty much common to humanity. And I really don't want this God at the bottom of my paper. I don't want him. I want him to be who he is. Anyway, so it's all yours, Matt.